Welcome to Juice Podcast. I'm Emily Harmon, and today I'm joined by
Melanie Guess. Well, Melisante Ligas, actually. It's a curious name, but yeah, people call me Melly, but you can call me as my own name, Melisante. Means honey flower in Wayward.
Means honey flower.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, well, that's lovely.
Had the chance to
like honeysuckle, like
honey, yeah. Flowers. Yeah.
That's like nice.
They were inspired, my parents, back at the time, so. Good.
Yes.
I couldn't choose in any way, but it's okay. Yeah. It's okay to have a nice name.
So, Melly, you're here with the wines that you make, which I have been importing now for, is it 2 years? Two and a half years?
A little bit
maybe
more.
Maybe three.
Yeah, maybe three. Yeah.
Like everything flies, before the pandemic is just like, yeah. I have no reference of time anymore.
Yeah, I think it's more 4 years, 2.5, because before pandemic,
Yeah, of course, because that was a year and a half. Yeah. Mm. And so, for everybody listening, tell us about Domaine Ligas. The names, why has it got a French name on some labels, why is it not?
Yeah. Well, actually, we are in the north of Greece, so in Pella region. And so I'm the second generation. My father started the winery in the 80s. He actually went to France for study, and he met my mother there. So he studied oenology because he wanted to study something more in science application. And for his bad luck, he didn't could enter to the to university in Greece for pharmacy. And then he went to France and he found out about biochemistry and oenology, and he studied there. And then he met my mother. My mother followed him to Greece, and he started working independent in other. Wineries, and he didn't find something interesting in chemistry of wine, because when you study chemistry wine, it's a lot of chemistry or
so you mean
stuff,
like he was studying winemaking, like enology, and then
enology, but they make you study things like a recipe of a cooking, so it's not really naturally approach. So my father always wanted to make sense of what he's doing. So he didn't understand why he had to put at the time in another jobs, enzymes or yeast or whatever. So he chose to be on his own. So he left his jobs and he created the Domaine Ligas slowly. So he started by renting some lands, making small quantities, etc. And he always believed in Greek varieties, so he didn't had the approach of mixing Merlot or Cabernet Sauvignon or Syrah or whatever, because it was at the time the philosophy of Greek winemaking back at the 80s. So
and that was, wasn't it? So Greek winemaking was very, like, I guess, like you saw in a lot of parts of the world, there was an attraction to be making international wines with great varieties that people recognize, and having loads of wood and dark colored wines and
typical wines like in France, like in Burgundy or in Bordeaux. So it was like the fashion to do that also, so they erase all the native selection that we had in Greece and they planted other type of vines, so it was not really appropriate also with the climate change and also with the difficulties of growing wines and stuff. So my father always wanted to do something a little bit differently, and he always believed in native selection as a rhodites, because rhodites in Greece is more used as blend because of massive production and low intensity. But he always thought that if I work well the vines, then I could reveal at what I can from this variety, so it's more important for him. So he started slowly, and now we are like a family together working, and I am since 10 years, following his path, and actually since 2018 I'm vinifying on my own. He's still with me because he's a patriarch, so he will be there until the last day of his life. It's okay, but he's following what I'm doing, and that's it. So for the record, we are half French, half Greek because of my mother. That's why on the labels we continue working with French people, and always stood with that on the labels. And it's also our identity. So we are half-half, so it's us.
Mm.
So, sorry about my voice.
No, that's okay. We're at the end. We're on the day after the Raw Fair, so it's definitely...
I was speaking yesterday, so yeah.
Yes, yeah.
And sorry about my English as well. So
no, English is great. I do apologize. Well,
I can.
And I think what's quite interesting about Ligas as well is the approach to farming as well. It wasn't just the varietals, using local varietals, but being really committed to working in a conscious,
Another
caring
perception.
Way towards the environment, right? So you're biodynamic in the beginning?
Well, actually, we are in permaculture way. So we are a certified biological, so organic way, because we need for some export countries. To have a certification of biodynamical ingredients, you need to be in with more producer to bring actually a certification from Germany or for France. For now, it's not really that open. Well, it starts, some certification centers start to do that, but it's not really in our motto to have a stamp on and say we are in the biodynamical, because actually we do things a little bit more naturally. For example, we don't buy any preparation 501 or something. We do our own teas. We are a little bit vegan style, so we try to make the most of approach with herbs, but it's herbs that we picked, so we don't buy. We go to the mountains behind, we pick some horsetail for making our preparation, we dry the herbs, and we make our own teas and decoction with the rain water that we collect. And we use zeolith, it's a mineral naturally found that permits to regulate the water or the heat on the vine. So it's another approach, a little bit more like, not like a biodynamical dogma, you know, that you have to apply some things, but some ideas are there. We follow the calendar, the lunar calendar for bottling, for harvest, for everything. And it's more an approach sustainable, because we are independent in energy, so we have the solar panels since early 2000, and we have also a dig with water, so we are the whole winery, it's independent, so we are really into consuming a little bit more consciously, so we want to be independent and do things well. And so the wines are naturally with low intervention, so we don't interact at all. We try to respect the juices.
So what you mean by that, for people listening, is that the wines aren't filtered, they're not fined, there's nothing added, you don't add sulfur.
We just take the juices from the grapes and we let them ferment naturally, and that's it. So we follow a little bit their evolution by the time, but we don't interact with something from outside, so either chemistry or other physical methods. So it's basically just the juices, as you press the juice and you drink it, so you make the fermentation occur and that's it. You let the fermentation occur. And
you make it sound very easy. Very easy to make wine.
It is easy, but you need time. Actually, I said that we are lazy because we don't work the wines as you can learn how to work. We're like waiting for respectful the time and do it by gravity and wait the time for bottling. So, we don't work a lot. We take coffees a lot. No, for breaks. We are like, well, in Greece, we like to take coffee break a lot. So, but because we are a few on the winery, so actually it's a family. So it's my father still there. It's also Petros, the cousin of my father. It's also Yanis, that is a friend, a good friend since 15 years working with us. It's also now Alex, who joined us, who is a friend of Petros. And, well, actually, he's a long cousin distance, but anyway, and me, and it was also at the time my uncle Takis, who is more mechanical, but now he's old and he's like can get out from his home. He's a former rocker, so you know, he was
he
also,
lived
yeah,
a,
yeah, he lived wild and it's okay, and now he's trying to rest, I guess, a little bit, because he has some healthy issues, but yeah, it's a small property, so we have some people coming for harvest, for helping and for pruning, but that's it. We have a team regular, and that's why we do small things slowly, so when harvest is done we can bottle or we can label the wines and send them, and it takes time, so by the time of February or March, when the vines are quite over or pruning, we start to bottling, we start to move the wines to get ready for bottling and stuff. So actually we work, but we don't do intensive work. We schedule the time with the seasons.
Mm.
And yeah, I'm handling so all the production and commercial part, but my father still makes some paperwork sometimes. Well, I won't cut things from my father, so otherwise he's gonna be, what am I doing now?
Yeah.
I'm gonna be like,
I think that's also nice, isn't it? That's the beauty of like having a family project like this, because I think it gives everybody a purpose.
Yeah, everybody has something to do, and we all complete each other.
Yeah.
Well, we yell also at each other, because I'm the only woman, and I try to figure out my place between men's, and in Greece there are really, really, really proud men. And women are like, okay, you don't count, you have not to do that or whatever, so they don't let me do crap things. Well, shit things, sorry about that, but I put my hand on dirt, I love that, I don't mind. But they say, no, but keep away, I will do for you. No.
As in, like, you won't be able to do some of the, like, things that they think are men's jobs, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
It's insane, isn't it?
Well, they want me to conserve my beauty. I don't know, I'm kidding.
I guess you could kind of use that to your advantage on days when you're not feeling up to it. It's like, do you know, I don't know, I've just got my nails.
Exactly. Well, I do my nails on dark express to see that, no problem for color, it's going to be dark anyway. So, But I was telling them last year when I was pregnant and I was harvesting, I said, okay, you have to take advantage of me. I'm waiting more. I have more weight than usual. So if I crash the battery, it's going to be easier for me to crash than you, that you are like 20 kilos
less. That's what you
said. Said, but you cannot get out after that. If you go in the tank, you're so fat that you cannot get out. I said, okay, fuck you. Sorry.
Did you get in and do it?
No, they didn't let me, because they didn't want also to take any risk for the baby, because I was like 8 months. 7 months pregnant, so they were like,
maybe that's not unfair in that circumstance.
Yeah,
maybe they were.
But I was like craving of energy, and I had to do something, you know. And until the last day of birth, I was like doing things. So, yeah, for me it was normal to do harvest, to do things. So,
yeah,
that's it. So funny things. But now that I don't have a baby in my belly,
you're the first one. Yeah. In the
Let me.
So what have we got to taste today?
As some of you that are listening hope so, know that we have a lot of cuvées. Well, actually, what I didn't say is that we have a lot of cuvées because of the selection in the vine. So each vine yard corresponds to one cuvée. Mm. So we tried simple. We tried to label as a variety type. And because in Greece you have several fields spread all over, so it's not a big field of vines growing, so it's a small part there, small part there, and so we do wines as identity of each vineyard. So we have plenty of wines, but today I'm gonna pour just five.
Okay, so where are we starting
We start with Aroditis.
Okay, cool.
So, as I was saying, my father, you know, was always into things that Greek were not. So the Aroditis, always my father believed in that variety from the beginning, and he was like quite the only one to work it monovarietal, so without blending. And he always believed that if we grow well the vines, then he can reveal that there is identity. Actually, in Greece, it is used, Roditis, for blending, for making massive production for making Retsina wine and stuff.
Is that just because of the like high yield that you can get from it? Or
yes,
like... or
it's because of the profile of Rosé. It's normally something really low intensity,
quite neutral,
flat and low acidity. So it's more like a volume approach.
But easy to grow? Like it's
easy to grow, so really easy. Okay. Yeah, easy. If you grow it really intensive, there will be a lot of quantity on the vines, but we are not. We are like 4 or 5 grapes per vines, and that's why the identity of Rovete is can reveal. But in the south of Greece, they grow like 10 grapes from vines. But he always believed at that. So, and always what my father started doing back at the time was skin contact before fermentation, because we never use any yeast or any chemical approach. So to extract all the quantities of yeast and having the fermentation occur, so we do have a skin contact before. So for Rodites, it's 3 days, so we let it on skins and ferment in inox. And now what stainless I do, steel. It's stainless steel, yeah.
Yep.
And then I let it on the lees of fermentation just for 6 months and bottling right away after, so early bottle as well.
And with all your wines, correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is even if they're fermented in steel, they usually do like a month or so in wood, right, to help sort of stabilize.
Yeah, always on the winter time, we let it stabilize. We let the winter just to rest, because we figure out that during fermentation, it demands a lot of energy. The wine to change to juices, to wine, so it needs also time after to settle down, to cool, to take temperature low, and the bacteria also occur, because we let also the malolactic fermentation occur again, and then we bottle with the time when it's a little bit more stable after winter and before the heats of springtime, and we let also in the bottle settle down before selling, like a month or two. It depends on the cuvée, sometimes more, but
I really like this Rodites. I think it's it definitely is more savory as well, out of all of the white, like, well, white slash orange slash,
yeah, slash green. Yes, wine slash not category at all.
But I find that this is, I love how fresh it is, and I like that it's not a demanding wine to drink. The vintage we've got here is 20, right?
Yes, 20.
Yeah, so I remember like with the 19, it was definitely a little bit lighter.
Yeah.
And fresher as well. But I do actually quite like that extra texture in this wine.
Me too. Well, when I was vintaging 2020, I was like, normally I let 2 or 1 days on skins, but I figured out that 1 day more give me more complexity. So I started fermenting on skins, and I said, oh, now I get a little bit more texture that I wanted. And also because of the soils of the region, we are in Pella, so I didn't speak about the soil, but we have a lot of clay and fossils, mineral. And we will want to extract that from the roots. So if we have this acidity in all of our wines, it's because we try to express that as well. So to balance the acidity, to balance all the grass and all the fat and all the freshness, it has to be a little bit complex wine.
Yeah.
So I try to find out that if I need more acidity, if I have more acidity on 1 year, I will extract a little bit more to balance, to have a little bit also I harvest more late, etc., etc. So it's it's a little bit of feeling. It's every year I try to stay on my schedule for vinification, but it can happen to change for 1 day or two of skin contact, etc. So the approach is really year by year something adapted.
Yeah, it's yummy, very yummy.
And back at the time, we were like stabilizing it in bottles. In old barrels, but I figured out I prefer to let it in the inox for a whole winter time, and it gives me as well.
So this wine never does its little stone. No. But the previous vintages did, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, actually, from 19th, I don't use oak for this range, And other previous vintages, yeah, we used it before because we put the vines in the cellar downstairs to cool down a little bit faster, and we cooled down in the barrels. But it was old barrels, 20 years old barrels. Okay. So
yeah.
Now,
no, I mean, there was never an oaky wine.
No, it's not an oaky. It's just just for settle down after fermentation, and also to, yeah, to make them sleep better in a dark place.
Very nice. Yeah,
I really love the 2020. I'm happy with it.
Yeah.
So after...
The annoying thing is, with a wine like that, I can just imagine in 6 to 12 months how delicious it's going to be, but it's all going to be sold and that's drunk the already.
Sometimes I think, okay, I need to keep my wines a little bit on the side, perhaps for customers that want a little bit more age or whatever. But I don't have time because, well, it's a problem, but it's not really a problem. My clients demand me quantities before even harvest. For example, I have demand for 2020 vintage, not even have the vintage get out yet from the roots.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's because you have a lot of demand, you have to spread a little bit to everyone because I want everyone to have some wines. So I try to figure out the demands of each one and to be correct with everyone.
So many jobs of a winemaker.
Well, actually, we plan a little bit to increase the production, but it takes a lot of time. We go slowly, slowly. So since 5 years, we're planting slowly, slowly. We haven't yet harvest the first ones because we had a lot of loss. Also because the roots are not really deep.
And sometimes you have to replant over a period of years, don't you? Because not all the plants.
We still replant. So. Yeah. So it demands time, and we try to to increase slowly, slowly. But it will be at the time when I will have enough wine for everyone, I guess.
She says that now. And then it'll be like the same thing. There'll just be more people buying wine.
Exactly. That's the problem.
It's a good problem.
We'll chat
to have
in a few years, and we'll see how it's going to grow after that. Yeah. I will still have the same problem, I guess. But anyway. So that was the Aroletis. Shall we go for Padre Trava now?
Yes.
So the main identity that we have at the estate, it's actually, again, my father's identity, but I'm so proud of that, and I continue that, is that we work a lot blanc de noir. So actually, that's our French philosophy, to have white wines from blackberries. So for people...
I think for people who have had blanc de noir as well, they're not quite like a standard blanc de noir wines, are they?
No, they don't. because it's also a little bit different, but
like appearance-wise, the flavour, everything, the intensity. Because sometimes I've tried still blanc de noir and I find that they can be a little bit boring.
Yeah, flat and no aromas.
Or... Yeah, it's just like, oh, why have they've just done this to be... Yeah. To maybe make white wine because it's a hot region or something.
Yeah.
But these are like... They're really I find it really fascinating, the style that you do, because it's so complex, but it's really interesting because you actually see, it's almost like the grape variety is in a different setting, you know, like, it's like Melly goes to the opera, and it's like Melly's there at the cinema, you know, like they're all like the same personality, but kind of showing themselves a little bit differently.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, actually it's helping a lot also the variety of Xinomavro. So the Xinomavro is the main variety to us in north of Greece, and it's really something interesting because it's a variety that is acid, has a lot of acidity, has a lot of tannins, has a lot of color as well. And my father always wanted to make white wine from that. Actually, you can make wine from that and make sparkling. There's a region really in the north of Greece that are making sparkling wine from Xinomavro named Zitsa. And but we want to make things still, so and so that's why it's the only one that we press. Pata Trava actually in Greece means press and pull, pata ke trava. And as I was saying earlier, we do a lot of maceration on our wines, so we use a lot of skin contact, but we don't use any press. So for that wine, we put the grapes into the press machine, it's an old one. And we let it roll. We don't press really as a program of pressing. We let it roll. And it's like, you know, when you want to get out the water from your...
Yeah, almost like a colander or a sieve.
Exactly. Yeah. So you take out the juice, and Yes, it will be a little bit colored, but not that much. It depends on the vintage. For example, the 2019 that we're tasting is more color than 2020 because we had also another approach of vintages and harvest. And that juice, it's really few hours on skin, like 3 or 4 hours on skins during that rolling time. And that's it. So that's fermenting in inox again, stainless steel. Mm-hmm. And bottling also in springtime, just before the summer.
I mean, I love this wine. I mean, I know that I try not to talk about the color of wine because obviously those, like the all the white pretentious males that work in wine are obsessed with color. We won't name any of them, but like, so I try not to talk about it, but this is a really beautiful color. Like it's got this kind of antique peach, amber, as Gwen would call it. Yeah, like almost copper,
copper kind
of color.
Yeah, so it is.
Beautiful. And it's amazing on the nose though. Like it's just, it's the beautiful thing about this grape variety is that you do get the fruit, but you also get that lovely savouriness, but just showing itself differently in this versus the rosé versus the red.
That's amazing with Xnomav Raw working. You have the main variety, but you have so many several possibility to work with. That's why I found it really interesting. It depends just on the time of skin contact or just also the selection of the high of the vineyard. So for example, Patatrava and Rosé are a little bit lower than the other ones.
And they're the same vineyard, right? For
it's
the two wines? Okay.
The Patatrava is a little bit lower.
Okay.
And the Rosé, it's a little bit, it's more old as a Patatrava. The Patatrava is a little bit more young. It's like 10 years old. And the rosé, it's 17 years old.
Okay.
So it's a little bit more complex as well, as evolving, etc. And you can work it in a red, light red, or a complex red. And also, what we do is for another, I don't have here, but in a Solera way as well. So I work it as well in a different way. So that's why I found that interesting.
Mm. Yeah, it's a fascinating wine because it's. It's not a white wine, it's not an orange wine, it's not a rosé wine, it's not a red, but it's like a bit of all of those things.
It has his own category. That's why we call it a gris, because it's not really a white, it's not really a red, it's not really a rosé.
I'd actually sell this to people who are looking for something orange almost as well. Because there is that bit of tan in there, but not too much.
Exactly, because it's not on skin, so you cannot even tell that it's an orange wine. But so... Legally, in the papers, we put it as a rosé, but it's not a rosé type at all.
Mm. Beautiful. Yummy, yummy, yummy. And for anyone in the background, we have another person in the room, so you're just hearing the odd giggle. It's not my voice changing or Melanie's sort of double... We haven't got double split giggles. Personality. There's someone else here. Hannah's joining us. So,
happy to be here.
So speaking about oranges, would you like to taste one?
Thank you.
So now we go for Asiatico. It's the Cuvée Lambda. Actually, when the first cuvées were made by my father, we had two whites. We had the Rodites and the Lambda. And the Lambda was something, the L represent a letter for Lefkos in Greece, means white, because it was the white wine and not the Rodites. So.
Okay.
And... So this wine evolved with the time. At the time, we were like few days of skin contact, like just one or two. And with the time, I increased those times of skin contact and I made it more like an orange wine.
Okay.
So actually, this one has 10 days on skin contact. So the grapes are in the tank and they ferment for 10 days. And every day I taste to see the extraction of tannins. So let's go again for the orange, so Lambda, it's an Asiatico. It's 10 days on skin contact and on inox tank. And then I take out the juice and leave the fermentation finish in inox again. And bottling in end of summertime.
Mm-hmm.
So for this vintage since 1919, it's just in inox. Back at the time again, we put it on all barrels, but for now, since two vintages now, we have only inox Stanislaw still. So actually this, yes, what I didn't say is this vineyard is really close to the winery, is the one really surrounding the winery. And we grow it in pergola. So mm-hmm. actually the vines are in a 2 meters highway, actually 1.8 meters high.
Yeah.
And my father made that approach back at the time because he wanted to extract the more minerality from the underground and stuck it into the wood part to spread it with the time and complexity as an identity of the soils. And also another advantage that we found in this way of growing is that the grapes are hanging and they are always in contact with wind, and that means no diseases, no bad things could happen, no solar also grilled or something, because the leaves are protected. And also easy picking for harvest. It's like you're extending up to your head, and it's really nice.
And the vineyard is responsible, well, it doesn't say on this, but the Assyrtiko Barrique is from the same vineyard?
No,
it used to be?
No, it's not.
Some of the old bottles said Lambda on the back of the Barrique.
That's a legal problem.
Okay. Because I'm should I have bought this out?
No. It's okay, because I explained that a lot. Because actually Assyrtiko was named just for Santorini's wine. So when everyone... And actually, Assyrtiko you find all over Greece, right?
Yeah.
But for protecting the region of Santorini, there was a time when they said, oh, it's forbidden to make Assyrtiko on a label. That's it. If you're not Santorini, you cannot put it on the label. So we had to change for some time.
Who was paying someone to put that in place?
Yeah, I don't know, but now it changed again. So the pressure make it on the opposite as well. So at the time, we were like, obviously, we have to put something, so we put Lambda Barrique, because Lambda is the other Assyrtiko that we have.
Oh, so people knew that they could...
Okay. Yeah, but we explained it, actually, to say that we had problem with labeling, so that's it, but it's two different vineyards.
Okay.
That's why, but yeah. But this is... mention.
This is, I love this, because it's such... It's a reason... It's really at a good price point as well, so it's definitely an orange for people who... want to put it on by the glass in place, or you'll see it by the glass in some places. But I love that there's some tannin there, but there's still that lovely saltiness as well. It's really tastes great. It tastes a little, I don't want to say it's a little bit less funky than before.
Yeah, because before
the other one was much more wild, it was pretty out there.
Yeah, it was because of the wood as well, and it was really difficult to follow that one at a time. So I prefer also to do something that it's. Easy on the beginning of the range, easy drinking for everyone. So I guess it's more for by the glass or something, as you said, orange approachable for everyone who doesn't love orange or tannins or whatever. So it's more something that I wanted to do a little bit more concentrated and, you know, with limits and stuff. And yeah, back at the time, it was also the 1 year was a little bit young, and it was a little bit also too much on the wood, living for like 9 or 10 months. So it was like too oaky, too tannin. So it was a little bit unbalanced. Well, after it depends also of the vintages, but I try to make the tasting just to follow the vintage. Yeah. So I take it slowly.
Definitely a bit more perfumed as well, this one, don't you think? It just feels like a bit more focused, a bit more aromatic and lifted.
Exactly. Actually, I prefer to have a little bit more pronounced in the nose and balance with the mouth. That's why I don't extract more or don't do any aging barrel, because I want to be balanced in the nose and in the mouth and more aromatical. So it's a game between balances, but I prefer those type than to be just more the oaky thing or more tannin or it's my point of view. I think that's why it changed a little bit since I'm on the
head of yourself. The
wines. A little bit more also discreet or something, a little bit more girly, or I don't know how to say woman thing.
Elegant.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Good. So to compare with the other, actually, Assyrtiko that we were talking, it's Assyrtiko Barrique. So that's 1 year, a little bit older, that comes to harvest earlier than everyone else. So it's the first that I pick every time. It's a vineyard that it's actually in Guyot style. And for this one, what I do, well, actually, it's one of the three ladies that we have on labels. So on the label, it's Maria Callas. For those
one of the most iconic opera singers in the world.
Exactly. It's also a favorite woman to my father. He loves Greek women in the culture. And actually, each woman represents a type of wine. And because of the character of the ladies and the character of the wine, we find similarities. And our designer, Athena, draw us the labels, and we agree directly with that. So that's Sirti Kobarik. So it's a vineyard that is a little bit more complex, but still have a lot of freshness, performance, and straightness. And what we do with this range is we do some days of skin contact. Actually, it's like 4 or 5 days. It depends. I start fermentation on skins. And while it begins fermented, I take it out and I put it in bottles. So it ferments in bottles and stays in there for 6 or 9 months. So actually this one stays for 9 months, the acetico. So it stays on the lees for the whole time, and it's more complex as well. So the barrels as well is Austrian oak, mm-hmm. So it's Stockiger. And it's really light, light grilled wood, because we don't want to give oak aromas. We just want to work the wine in it and not to mask or put anything on the top of the wine. Mm. So that's it. And also, I leave it after bottles. I leave it also in inox tank for 5 months to settle down before bottling, because it needs a little bit more time. That's why it's released a little bit more further than the other ones. Mm. This is 2019 vintages.
Okay.
Vintage.
Yes, we're just tasting the 2019 Assyrtiko Brig. Yeah, this is definitely the opposite almost of an Assyrtiko from Santorini, totally, right? Textured, totally. Umami, there's yeah. like layers of complexity, there's yeah. this nuttiness, there's honey, there's fruit, there's perfume. Mm. And it's not that kind of...
It's also really spicy
yeah.
that you cannot find in other Assyrtiko. You have a, like a gingerbread, you know?
Ginger, yeah.
It's more like, well, we don't say a Christmas wine, but actually in winter... people love it to drink it for Christmas, also parties or food, a little bit more spices.
This for me with tagine yeah. would be yes, spot
well.
On.
Yeah. As well, but I love it with cheese as well, because it yeah. goes so much with cheeses, different cheeses, smoky cheeses.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so nice.
Very nice.
But it's definitely more complex and more in another approach than the basic range. So.
Mm. And the last one today.
It will be Moscow Mavro. So let's go for something also or out of category.
Yes.
Because it's not really a red, it's not really a rosé. It's something in between. So Moscow Mavro, it's a variety. Also a little bit forgotten that my father and believed in it to work it. So it's... it means aromatic black. Mosho is what it smells.
Like musk, basically,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what I do with that cuvée is an infusion style. So I let the grapes in the vine, in the tank, the inox for 21 days. So I don't know if there is an hazard between female cycle, etc., but I found out that at the end of 20 days, I get what I want, you know? So the 21 days, I bleed the tank. So I don't know if it's something, I don't know. Anyway, it's like, well, we laugh at the state at the time, because it's like girly thing. I don't know, it's,
yeah.
it's my only, anyway, it's a little bit out of league.
So you leave them, are they whole bunches or are they de-stemmed?
Well, no, de-stemmed.
So de-stemmed in a tank, and what, do you just kind of wet the top of the cap or something?
Yeah,
and
that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. I just put the temperature roll on, so the water control temperature not to increase over 22 degrees, because I want that fresh. And
rough.
So I wanted something fresh, so the temperature control is really important for this red. And then for fermentation, after the 21 days, stays on the tank. And I bottle really, really fast, like in springtime. So it's something like a rosé approach, but it's red. And because of the low acidity, the low intensity in aromas and in tannins of this wine, I don't want to do something really like a red. So I want something yummy, fresh for summertime, because in Greece we don't drink a lot of red in summer as well. So, and I want something more easy drinking.
Yeah.
Something in between.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
Definitely more aromatic. It does have that perfume, musky.
Exactly.
Kind of floral.
And in the mouth it's not really that pronounced. It's more like light or white, you know? So it's easy drinking. And
not tannic. Yeah,
not tannic.
And is that a bear on the label?
Yeah, actually, this label, again, Athena drew us for that for us. But it's a bear because in this region there were some bear existent, and it's actually a vineyard that we rent, and the owner is a really friend of us. We work with him really long time, but it's not our own. Vineyard, but we have a contract and a long rental contract, so we are in permaculture as well in these wines, and we put it on the site of the regular wines just because we are not the owners, but we work it for that, and and the other one is the Acidico Maison
Viticole, which has the eagle,
is the eagle, yeah. And we had also the Roditis ones, but it was a 1 year that get off, so it was unrooted, I would say. So we don't have it anymore. So that's
lovely.
It for a small selection.
Thank you so much for taking us through the wines today. Yeah, and obviously we'll have you back at some point and dig into the other wines, because you make over 10. Like, it must be, well, we've got 12. You've got 17 in total. It's a lot of balls to juggle, isn't it?
For example, I make also with Moschoma, I make a Blanc de Noir actually for a project with Zulu Wines. I don't know if you've heard in France. So it's also a pop-up project, just. Okay. But I make some of you. And in Korea, it will be also a new cuvée. But we will send just the cities that are representing. But yeah, 17 in total.
Well, I look forward to trying that one day.
Yeah.
hint. But thank you so much. And so good to have you on the podcast.
Good. And see you soon, then.
Yeah, until next time.
Thank you. Enjoy.
We're all cheersing here now. Even Hannah. And so for those of you that are listening, you can find us on Instagram at juice.podcast. And also on Twitter, juice_podcast. Hopefully I haven't got those around the wrong way. And I am Emily Harmer. I'll be joined by Gwen, hopefully, in the next few episodes. And thank you for tuning in.